So a couple of things that you mentioned in class that I thought were very interesting. One of the things that you said that this dance no longer belongs to Hispanics, to Latinos. Can you tell me more as to why you said that?
Well, yeah, it's a worldwide thing now. It's ever since I started traveling in the early 2000s, I saw the growth everywhere I went. Like when I went to Asia, I went to, Australia, everywhere, everybody was already growing and everybody was already, getting so good. Then I remember I went to South Korea and I was floored. I mean, everybody, the dancers there, I was like flavor, flow, they knew. I was like, wow. I was amazed by it. First time I went to Japan, the same thing. And then as I traveled all over the world and I started going to Europe, I started noticing, wow, like, these people now endorse the culture. Because that's what it is. But they endorse the culture and now they kind of made it their own because salsa has always been worldwide and always everybody always loved it. But now it's so much more of an obsession. You know what I'm saying? That now it's not only, oh, I'm learning how to dance salsa, I'm learning the culture. You
Right.
know what I'm saying? So that's why it no longer belongs to us because a lot of them do it better than we do.
Yeah, which is crazy,
Oh,
right?
yeah, amazing. But it's good to see because, it's good to see that salsa is so widespread. You know, that it's not just one dimensional or it's not regional. You know what I'm saying? That it's not confined to just one culture. It's good to see that it's confined. It's like bachata. Bachata is no longer Dominican. You know, everybody that's dancing out there, Asian, Russian, all these kind of people, they're dancing it awesome. And then you have all these different styles. So, it's all growth, evolution.
Absolutely. Do you think there's somebody, a single person, who introduced that art to the rest of the world, or do you think it's just kind of trickled down as it was?
Well, it started predominantly in New York and Puerto Rico, because a lot of the dancers, a lot of the growth from the dancing when it became commercialized, right, was, the dancers from New York were a big influence. And of course, the Puerto Ricans already had their dancing on too. But predominantly, this started in La Fania, and also the Palladium days. But the thing is that it wasn't really, how can I say, it was more of a social street dance back then, La Fania, Palladium days or whatever, even though Palladium, everybody went very well dressed. You have Machito, Tito Puente, and all of them. But, when it started becoming more mainstream, salsa started becoming more mainstream, and it got to a point where it was no longer like everybody used to look at salsa as an underground thing. You know what I'm saying? And then they started making movies about it and stuff. But then, as time went on and La Fania gave it the name salsa, and then it started growing, and then the Congresses came. And then that's when everybody started realizing and recognizing, that wow. So I will attribute it to La Fania. I'll attribute it also to the Congresses. The first Puerto Rico Congress in '97. Remember, we met the LA dancers. They danced on water, but they didn't know they danced on water. They didn't know how to count. They just danced to the feeling of the music. And us New Yorkers, when they went, they were beautiful, awesome people and very nice people, and it was the Vasquez brothers. And they got close to us and we started talking to them, hanging out with them. And they were like, what is that? One, two, three, five, six, seven. And we were like, oh, we've got to that. And they were like, and they were doing shows amazing, because they had, the talent was there. So then long story short, they started learning to count from us. So once they started to learn to count, then of course, Eddie Torres was the main man in New York, who of course was a huge influence to all of us. Then everybody started recognizing us because of that guy. That, now that's becoming more mainstream and the rest is history.
You tell me that before 97, the paths of on one dancers and on two dancers did not cross right
No,
before?
not at all, not much because there wasn't technique applied to it. The technique wasn't really there. It wasn't really like some people know how to count, and some people knew the culture through dancing and also the culture through the different dances of Cuba. So people knew all the dancers from Cuba, casino, all these different dances, cha-cha-cha, Afro, rumba, and all that stuff. And then people started realizing the technique comes from there. But nobody really, everybody in Cuba, and when they dance song, they dance to the instruments. It was predominantly to the drum, to the instruments and all that stuff. But then as time went on, that Eddie Torres started, because Tito Puente was the one that came out and said, he told Eddie Torres, you dance on two. And but he didn't know what that was.
Right.
And then Dido Bondo, who was rest in peace, was a percussionist. He was like, you dance to the beat of the drum. Yeah. And then he was like, that's the clack of the congas, 2 and 6. So you guys dance on 2.
Yeah.
And then that's when everybody started counting and all that good stuff. But the congresses, when the workshop started, when people started teaching with numbers and all that stuff, that's what made the business grow even more.
So that's from what you're saying, it's pretty recent phenomenon.
Oh yeah.
Like it got structured fairly recently.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah. Like when back in the 80s, you know, people just used to listen to the salsa and salsa romantica and stuff, but they would just dance whatever. Mm-hmm. They weren't dancing kick to count. They were dancing side to side, forward and back, whatever, whatever. But they were just dancing to the flow, the natural flow of the music. Mm-hmm. You know, like you would dance any song, but they didn't know about counting and all that stuff. Eddie Torres was the one that materialized that concept of 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But for example, the ballroom world, they counted.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. And then, you know, when the song, the when you started identifying the mambo in the ballroom world, they danced the same count as some. So in the ballroom world, mambo was 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8. Mm-hmm. Eddie Torres materialized it into 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7.
Okay.
But remember, everything comes from the instruments. The club is counted differently. Mm-hmm. The congas counted differently. You know what I'm saying? So then once we started learning about that, we were like, wow. So that's when all the dancers, so what we were like, okay, this is becoming mainstream now. We need to know our stuff. Because if we're going to go out there to these congresses and teach, right, we can't just come up with moves. Oh, yeah, follow me, monkey see, monkey do.
You mentioned ballroom. Why do you think ballroom so different? Because it seems like a completely different dance, right? And they have so many different disciplines that they bring in. And obviously, I was just watching them dance, straight legs, postures very different,
oh, yeah,
the way that they move different. Because it still, it seems like, at least with cha-cha-cha and salsa, the foundation is still the
mm-hmm,
same.
Mm-hmm.
But why do you think they dance so differently?
The difference between ballroom and what we do, again, I think it's street. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more grounded. It's right, more, you know, revolved around the Afro. But the ballroom, they created their own syllabus. Mm-hmm. And it became their own genre of dance. So when you came into paso doble, bolero, you know, cha-cha-cha, and, you know, all these different dances, that was created in the ballroom world.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So the ballroom world, they did it right. We didn't do it right. Mm-hmm. Because we started it kind of like, hey, you know, we're just going to do our thing or whatever. You have your style, I have my style. You know, ballroom started and said, okay, we're going to create one syllabus. Mm-hmm. And that one syllabus is going to be sold. And people are going to have to be certified.
Right.
People are going to have to become, you know, competition certified, competition ready, and all that stuff. So it became more formal.
Right.
And then ballroom also was very prestigious because they were spending money on costumes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very, you know, so that became more commercial, where now people were like, okay, if you want to learn ballroom, you know, it's like ballet.
Right.
You know, ballet has one structure. You know, and ballet has their own moves, their own names and all that stuff. We didn't do that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? When Eddie Torres or whoever came up with the name Susie Q, everybody was like, all right, Susie Q. But it wasn't part of a formal syllabus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which where we had, where I've always said, this is where we kind of failed. Because if we would have done that, even hip hop has every single move, has its own name and all that stuff. And it has one structure to build from, you know, whereas salsa, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Cuban style, you have New York style, you have Puerto Rico style, you have all kinds of different styles. So now it became like, you know, like Kizomba.
Right.
You know, you have urban kids, you have, and then you have the nature, the natural Kizomba that came from, I remember one country in Africa, but, you know, when it's like that and everybody's kind of, you know, grappling at the teapot of, oh, no, this is my style, this is my style. And no, you do this style and that style,
right,
then it becomes convoluted.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whereas ballroom didn't do that.
So with Eddie Torres, obviously he was like a huge figure in the salsa world, on two especially. And you mentioned that he created CZQ. Did he have some sort of structure that he created?
Yeah, he did, but that came later.
Okay.
See, the thing is, Eddie was teaching already. Eddie's been around for a long time.
Right.
And Eddie's the guru, he's a mambo king. But the problem was that Eddie didn't, you know, he was great at what he did. But when it came to the business aspect of it, that part wasn't taken care of. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame it on Eddie. I just, overall, it was something that nobody took it and said, okay, we're going to, you know, like Eddie did it the right way. You know, he created his own band, you know, he created events and all that stuff, but it was more like street. It was all street. It was still considered street. Right. It wasn't considered like mainstream where, okay, this is just Mambo structure. This is what we're going to follow. Mm-hmm. Because then you had the 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8 Mambo. And then you had the 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7 in New York. And then Puerto Rico did it differently. Right. So there was no really like reference to go by. But I think if it would have been commercialized or let's say formalized at that time, mm-hmm. salsa would have become more mainstream. But everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. Because the Congresses have made salsa bigger than we ever imagined it would become.
Right. Man, it's so awesome, man, to pick your brain about these things.
I love it. I love to talk about it.
So much of history that you know and so many interesting facts. So it's awesome. You talked about body movement in the class earlier this week, I think on Monday. And you mentioned that there were a number of years that you were dancing before you realized some of the things that you could do better. And then once you start doing those things better and made those improvements, it really changed the game for you. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because that struck me as a very fascinating fact, because I thought like in the first few years you've mastered it and you were doing, you know, going well from that point. But from what you said, it wasn't the case.
Yeah, when I started dancing, I started dancing in the streets of New York. I used to go to the Palladium in New York, not the old Palladium, but the new Palladium, Copa, all this stuff. And I was just look at people dancing. And I was taken from the streets to learning choreography. But I was learning choreography. I never was taught any technique. So the thing was that when I came to dance, I just kind of, you know, followed. And okay, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. And I had a girlfriend who used to dance for the late David Melendez. And she started dancing for him. And she taught me how to count. And she was telling me, look, this is the basic or whatever. But she wasn't a teacher. Mm-hmm. She just said, oh, look, this is the basic. They dance on two. Mm-hmm. And we used to go to a place in the Bronx called Side Street. Very famous place. That's where all the dancers congregated. Sunday, it was called after the beach party. Okay, you went from Orchard Beach, which in the afternoon, you went there was bands, you danced on the boardwalk, yeah. And then you went to Side Street. Yeah, food, it was very cultural, very awesome. Long story short, I learned the basic, and I was okay, you know, great. And I would just have fun. And one day, my good friend, Vitigo La Magia, from New York, said, listen, they're putting together a team, you know, and the men are from Dominican Republic, the women are Puerto Rican, so come, you're Dominican, come. There, I said, okay, cool. So I just started learning choreography. One day, I was doing, a Latin Madness, a famous show that we did, and I saw Frankie Martinez dancing. And I remember we were dancing, he was like, move your ribcage. I was like, my ribcage. I was still having to my feet, you know. And he was like, yeah, move your ribcage. You need lateral movement. I was like, wow, okay. So I started kind of, and again, I had the motion, but I didn't know how to dominate it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I didn't know how to control it.
Right.
So I'm dancing or whatever, and I'm like, oh, wow, okay. So then I started looking into, you know, ribcage movement and all this stuff. And then he was like, yeah, your ribcage and your shoulders and I was just like blown away. I was like, and then I went to a body isolation workshop that Frankie did in Russia. We were in St. Petersburg, Russia. And I said, you know what? Let me take this workshop. And I was so sore at the end of it. I was like, this is 2005, something like that. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, and he's doing all these movements, these isolations, he's amazing, you know? And I'm like, wow. And then I met Franklin Diaz. And then Franklin Diaz told me about learning how to move my hips. And I was like, my God, I thought I know how to dance. So I started incorporating these things and then I started watching. And then before that, I had started taking some Afro classes. Mm. So I was traveling the world and stuff like that. And I remember in Norway, there was this really good Afro, I remember his name, really good Afro teacher. And he was teaching a lot of the movements. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. So I became enamored with the Afro culture. Mm-hmm. And then I started really learning history. And then I was like, oh, wow, now I know why we dance the way we dance. So I started doing research. I started training myself, practicing to work, you know, work on my body. And then once I started developing body movement, my feet were like feathers. Because then I started becoming lighter on my feet, and I started not focusing on my feet and focusing on my body. And I was like, oh, this makes sense.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that, because feet sometimes do feel kind of heavy.
Yep.
And you mentioned in class before that it starts with the core, with mm-hmm. the body.
Yeah.
So it's trying to understand that and wrap my mind around that. But I think through practice, hopefully it will become more clear, because yeah. it's like rewriting how your body moves in a way.
Well, I already see a difference in you. Like today I was watching you dance, and the video, one of the videos you put up, I was like, wow, you actually look different now than when I used to see you before.
Well, I'm trying to take into account the suggestions that mm-hmm. you gave about keeping the knees bent,
yes.
keep, you know, moving the rib cage right. and soft feet, all of that. But it does take time. It doesn't just click right away.
Right.
It's like,
yeah, because you know what it is, that you're kind of reformulating yourself, and that's what happened to me. Yeah. I used to dance on my heels when I first started that. Imagine doing a basic on your heels.
Yeah.
Right. So once I started understanding the culture. Right. And I started understanding the moves and the message of the moves, because mm-hmm. that's another thing I learned through Afro. I learned to understand that it's a spiritual thing. Mm-hmm. So all of these motions that you do are all signals and prayers and all that stuff, but part of the religion. I've never been a part of the religion, but I started learning, mm-hmm. you know what, you know, Yemaya man and all this stuff, and Kachao and all this stuff. And I started realizing, like, wow, this is where it all comes from.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then I started also watching African dances.
Yeah.
And I was watching and I was like, wow, it's all soft. It's all, you know, and then I started understanding now you start understanding your body. Mm-hmm. And now your body actually moves. So a lot of the movements that we do, we absorb the energy from the earth.
Right.
Because our dance is terrestrial. Mm-hmm. So it's very like, you know, everything is bouncy, and you start putting your weight mm-hmm. on your knees.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, through a lot of research and me dancing, I started realizing, like, the weight of the body goes on your knees and not on your feet. So that made me even lighter on my feet, along with controlling from my core.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, that's where good instruction comes in. Because if you watch people dance, just at the social, for example, I can tell you that a lot of people will stomp on one, they will transfer body weight differently. And so when you come to a class like this, and then you start learning, you realize, okay, this is not what I've seen out there. And, you know, that also could be pitfall, you know?
Well, you know, I pride myself in, you know, the structure that I built for my school. I started this in the late 90s. And it was something that I had a vision. And I know, and because I've never taken classes, like mm-hmm. formal Mambo classes, like a program, never. So I started watching other instructors, and I started just watching it. And I started doing trial and error. And that's how, for example, in 98, how I came out with my spin technique, which is called the Santo Rico spin technique. Trial and error, I started looking at things, but I also did martial arts when I was a teenager. So in martial arts, I learned a lot how to control my body weight. Mm-hmm. And I was a chubby kid. Mm-hmm. But you know, I came this close to doing a split mm-hmm. when I did martial arts, right. because it was all about body control. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that stuff I started kind of implementing into my dancing. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, you know, I want to learn this and I want to do it, but I want to do a very good, sustainable structure. Mm-hmm. So then I started realizing a lot about the dance. And I said to myself, I want to be very technical, you know, and I want people to understand why they move a certain way.
Correct.
And I also want people to respect the spiritual aspect of the dance as well, mm-hmm. which comes from the movement.
Right.
Cause it's always a message,
right.
you know what I'm saying? But right. you have to be grounded,
yep.
you have to have good balance, okay? And you have to understand what the music is telling you to do.
Yes.
And that's how I like to teach.
And 100%, that is really the case when you talked about the part of the culture, part of a folklore. I took Rumba class.
Okay.
And they talked about how it's part of the dance. It's a mating dance.
Absolutely.
Rumba. And the guy's supposed to show off his stuff to a woman, and even like,
yeah. El bacunao,
like
yeah.
throw some, you know, whatever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah, into women.
It's a story.
Covers, yeah, yeah. And it was amazing to me, because I did not know those moves had meaning. and it was part of so engraved in the culture itself. You know?
Well, what happens is that, you know, I wanted to learn a lot about, I wanted to learn about the culture because I didn't want to disrespect the culture.
Right.
You know, a lot of people out there, for example, you know, when I first started dancing mambo, you know, for example, Eddie Torres made up a move called Cuban. But, you know, there's different ways of doing it. But when you're doing it according to rumba, one way of doing Cuban. Or one way of doing the rumba, the Afro-Cuban basic.
Mm-hmm.
So you do it right, and you have to move your hips a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that was something that was like, I had an epiphany, and I was like, wow, I've been doing it wrong this whole time. You know what I'm saying? So then it was like one of those things where I was like, I want to do this right.
Yeah.
And I want to respect it. So I started, you know, studying a little bit, and I started learning the moves, and I started learning, you know, all of these, you know, all of these the different names and the titles and what they meant.
Yeah.
You know, because when you talk about rumba, you know, you have three different dances.
Right.
Which is jambu, columbia, and guaguancó. You know, so all three dances have three different messages.
Yeah.
One is very slow. The other one is warriors fighting each other. And the other one is the mating one. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wow, this is deep.
Yeah. And then term mambo, I thought that it was exclusively referring to dancing on two. But then I've seen some YouTube video where I think somebody from Colombia said dancing mambo and they were dancing on one. So I was going to ask you, is that something that just, is it a different term for salsa or do you know?
Okay, the word mambo is very versatile because the word mambo is, for example, when we began the antu,
yeah.
Okay, we called it mambo because in the Palladium days, they didn't call it salsa.
Mm-hmm.
They call it mambo.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to dance on two.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Millie Donne, Cuban Pete, all this stuff, they dance on two. Right? But they never, like I said, it was never really defined.
Right?
Right? But they dance on two. That's why they called it mambo. Why? Because they dance mambo music.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you listen to Tito Puente's music, that's pure mambo. Right? Which is salsa and jazz kind of fusion of both.
Right.
Right. And then you have a little bit of charanga and stuff like that. And then you have pachanga and all those are fused in together. And but the moves are the dances is come from the musical mambo. Okay. Now, there's a part in the song, which is called the height, the climax. Right. It's called el mambo.
Right.
That's the descarga. You know what I'm saying? Right. So but now universally, when people hear the word dancing mambo, it's on two. Now, I don't know what that, I would have to see what he meant by that, because but it's dancing on two.
Right.
And also mambo, the music, because you have mambo music.
Right.
And then you have mambo, the part of the salsa, right, within the salsa, climax. So there's different terminologies.
Okay.
Yeah, like you could hear merengue, and a lot of the merengueros will go, mambo! That's when the song is rising.
Right. Okay. What one thing that you would say leads can do better, new leads particularly, and then one thing that new followers can do better? I know, I'm shifting gears.
No.
Shifting gears.
I love your questions because you're bringing it down to the core of everything. This is my perspective of things are as follows. This day and age, a lot of people want to bring what they do on stage to the social floor. And they don't go hand in hand.
Mm.
Okay. What, for example, if you go to a workshop and an instructor is teaching you a turn pattern, it has to be relatable. It has to flow into you dancing and growing from your basic. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? What I tell leads is if you're going to learn how to dance, learn the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is about. Learn the seven main turn patterns.
Mm-hmm.
The seven main turn patterns give you now what you need to do because your footwork doesn't change. What changes is the decoration. You know what I'm saying? But if you're sending a girl this direction, you can't stop her and make her change direction
right. And
think that that's social.
Right.
Now, if it's a girl who's been, you know, a great follower, she's great experience, she's fast or whatever, she may be able to follow it. But I tell people, keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it simple. Why? Because when you dance, it looks beautiful when it's technically sound, good fundamentals, and then you grow from there. Because you could do so much with social patterns.
Mm-hmm.
When it's social, keep it social. When it's choreography, keep it choreography, right? For the ladies, learn to control your own body weight, okay? By dancing from your core. Learn to not learn the turn pattern. Learn how to follow the turn pattern. Because there are techniques to this. This is why in my program, I offer leading and following classes. I offer spinning classes. Mm-hmm. You know, I offer all of this so people can see the different techniques because there's theory to everything. Every single move that you learn, every single turn pattern, every single technique, every single little thing that you, if you learn spinning, there's technique to that. If you learn the Suzy Q, there's a theory to that. All of it has theory. I tell everybody, learn the theory of dance first. Everything will come easy. You'll be able to pick up anything because you're learning the right way.
I am now at the point where I'm going to feel like an amateur again, even though, you know, after 2 years dancing on one, now dancing on two. But I've already been through that, you know, and I know that now I have to get on the dance floor and without knowing everything or knowing a lot, rather, still going to have to do it. So my question, my next question revolves around the psychological component for a new lead who is maybe intimidated, who thinks maybe already an introvert as is, and who doesn't know a lot of moves or just starting to dance. What would your advice be for someone like that who is maybe definitely like a little bit nervous about dancing?
You're nervous about dancing?
I'm not nervous about dancing, but I know.
You don't seem like an introvert, by the way.
Yeah. I've danced enough now before on one that not to be nervous, but I know that on two, I'm going to have to go through growing pains, you know,
sure.
Meaning like learning everything over again and understanding how that works. Yeah. And with that going to come some setbacks on the dance floor.
Right.
So from your perspective, you know, let's even take me out of it. Just somebody completely new who is just, you know, maybe just not comfortable around being watched by people. And then moreover, uncomfortable because he doesn't have it yet.
Okay.
What would your advice be for a person?
Well, number one is when you're transitioning, it's always easier to teach a student who's starting from zero, who's never danced, teaching them on two or teaching them anything because they're not confused. When you're transitioning from one to on two, it's a little bit more challenging because what happens is you're still thinking on one. Mm-hmm. Okay. But this is what I tell people. Increase your IQ of music. Mm-hmm. That's what I tell everybody. Once you start increasing your IQ of music and you start realizing what every instrument does, mm-hmm. it's easy. It's easy. Also, understand the difference between dancing on one and dancing on two.
Right.
Okay? And last but not least, it's all about the passion. When I was learning how to dance and they were teaching me choreography, you know, I would live in New York. And, you know, I used to have my 9-to-5. And when I get in the subway, I start dancing in the subway station. I will start doing my Suzy Qs, and I will start mimicking the turn patterns. And people would look at me like I was crazy. But it was just my passion. I had a bug for it, and I couldn't stop. So to me, I always tell people, catch that bug. Through your passion for dance, if you really love it, never stop, because you never stop growing. You never stop learning. My first choreography that I ever did, okay, was through mistakes from my students. So I used to teach, and I would tell us, okay, crossbody lead with a left turn, right? And I saw one student do crossbody lead, he did the right turn. And I was like, okay, that's not correct, but we're going to make something out of that. And I was like, okay, we're going to do a crossbody lead with a right turn. And I was like, okay. So what I did with that, I got together a whole bunch of moves, I did them opposite direction, and I created my first choreography. So there's no such thing as right or wrong when it comes to your passion. You know what I'm saying? You're going to learn it right. But just learn it fundamentally, mm-hmm. IQ of music. And remember, it's all about your passion. Because your passion is eventually going to supplant your fear mm-hmm. and your intimidation and all that stuff. And I always tell people, there's no such thing as not succeeding with a lot of practice. Tell people all the time. As long as you practice, doesn't matter, you're going to make it.
I'm glad that you brought up practice because as far as individual practice versus partner practice, what do you think the ratio should be for new dancers?
The ratio of, say it again, I'm so sorry.
So I'm curious, the difference between individual practice, so me dancing in front of the mirror, doing shines, working on my body movements, versus really practicing with a partner, understanding how to lead a lady, mm-hmm. how to do the turns and everything. What do you think that ratio should be? Should there be 50-50 between the two?
Yeah, 50-50. But remember, get your footwork right first. Footwork right first. As long as you, because the reason why we do a lot of shines in all these classes, you know, it's not because we're going to use all these shines, okay? Unless we're doing a choreography, all shines, whatever. But it's because that makes you into a better lead. Because, mm-hmm. for example, a lot of times you see guys dancing socially, and what do? They'll dance, they'll plant themselves, and they'll spin the girl. Mm-hmm. They don't have good footwork, mm-hmm. right? You've already started learning partner work from me. I already told you, what you do with your upper body mm-hmm. dictates what the girl does with her hips,
right?
So all of that comes in together.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So practice, get good at your body work and your footwork over there, partner work, easy. But practice them together at the same time.
I can definitely vouch for the fact that, you know, practice does, not just practice, but rather shines, make a difference. I didn't do them for, I don't know how many months before I first started. And then when I started doing them, I had a hard time. But I started feeling that my balance was getting better. And that kind of blew my mind. I was like, I feel a little bit more grounded in my feet. I'm like, maybe because I was moving a little bit more on my own and trying to figure out my own body. And that's done through shines and through different patterns.
I always tell people everything in dancing is cause and effect. Cause and effect. I always tell people, listen, when you're going to dance, right, and you are fundamentally sound, and you understand the theory. I always mention the theory because when people know theory, like for example, if I ask you, okay, how do you execute? Why do we dance on two? And you tell me, boom, we dance on two, blah, 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 right? X, Y, Z. Okay, that's theory. You understand the theory. Mm-hmm. And it starts with this,
right?
The famous Michael Jackson, rest in peace, said it. Okay, your goal is to transcend what you have here to here.
Mm.
And to get to the point of not thinking anymore.
Right.
That you can improvise and just have fun and do your thing and just go from there. Mm. Right? That's the most important part of it. Theory first. Once you learn theory, and that's why you say, I feel so much more grounded. Because I see you on Instagram and I see your videos and stuff. You love it.
Oh, yeah.
You love it. But you process it. You analyze it and you put it to practice. That's important.
And by the way, I love to have a structure. Yeah. I love when I can go deeper into it and know the reason why I'm doing something.
Yes.
Not just do it.
Yeah.
You know?
The why. It's called the why.
Yes. And then the proper technique, right? I probably didn't tell you, but I was in fitness for years.
Okay.
So I used to be a personal trainer.
Oh, okay.
I used to be like a bootcamp instructor and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And so when you go through some of these, you know, I guess a profession or certifications, you break everything down a lot.
Right.
And then you teach your clients to do something. You have to, like, sometimes people, if they don't know how to do, let's say, a squat or a deadlift, you can't just teach them to do a deadlift. You have to teach them how to do 1/5 of a deadlift.
Right, okay, right.
And then you just,
right.
segment by segment by segment.
Oh,
so
yeah.
For me, if I cannot get a move, I want to be able to know how to do maybe half of the move or 1/4 of the move.
Yeah.
And that helps because everything is, then I can put it together like a puzzle.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that I used to be into bodybuilding.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. And that's one of the things that I noticed. When I first started bodybuilding, I just started going to the gym. And I hurt myself when I was 19 years old. Mm-hmm. I hurt my back really badly because I wasn't educated.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to do. I just wanted, you know, I'm strong. I can do it. And it's so funny because I remember I met a guy and he told me one day, he said, it's all diet, mm-hmm. it's all nutrition. He was 99% of what you do is nutrition. I was like, but I like my rice and beans and fried chicken. And I was, he was like, you gotta eat right.
Yeah.
And then he told me, and you also have to exercise right. Technique of exercising, that's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to know something? I started going to the gym when I was like 17, 18 years old. And I went like for a good 8 years. Didn't gain anything. I got stronger. But once I started doing what that guy told me and how to work out and how to isolate muscles and everything, my body changed completely. Mm-hmm. So I can relate to what you're saying.
Yeah. Couple more things. Mm-hmm. I want to be respectful of your time. I can talk to you forever. social dancing. Do you recommend, especially new dancers, to start social dancing from day one in conjunction to what they learn, or should they have a solid base first before they even consider
solid base? Solid base, yeah. Because you don't want to go, that's when people get frustrated. A lot of people think that, yeah, I'm going to take one cycle with Santo Rico, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to go dancing. Mm-hmm. You know, you heard my joke in the class. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to learn, if you want to go to a wedding in a month and dance, it's not going to happen for you. Right, right. So I tell people, get the base.
Yeah.
Get the base, and then once you start going out, do what I did. I used to like dancing with women who were 10 levels higher than me. Because I used to like to know what it actually felt like. And that helped me a lot. But get the base first, get the foundation, get comfortable, right? And then just do your thing from there.
Okay.
And it doesn't take long, by the way. It's not a matter of, oh, I'm going to take classes for a year and not dance. No, it's not like that. You're going to take classes as time goes on. For example, let's say you take beginners, mm-hmm. and you learn the five fundamental patterns. Okay, you can go out dancing and try it. Try with somebody who dances on two, blah, blah, blah. You got it. No problem. Yeah.
And then just to wrap things up, what kind of opportunities you have at Santo Rico? Somebody who is maybe, again, new to dancing, or maybe even a few different levels. Maybe somebody who's intermediate level and considering performing, or completely new dancer. Can both individuals find something for themselves in Santo Rico?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have different divisions of everything. We have kids. We have performance teams, we have ladies teams, we have, we pretty much offer everything here. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I pride in myself as far as having my own school is having a school that offers pretty much all of the different aspects, you know, of dancing, and of course, to both social and performance as well. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, we're going to be starting our teams really soon. I'm going to be starting my training team and my student team. And of course, I have my pro team and stuff like that. So we're very involved in the performance circuit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the cycles start every 2 months.
Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, any closing thoughts? You know, how do you feel about Orlando dance scene, or what are you looking forward to the most in the next few months? I guess.
How do I feel about Orlando dance? It's very different than New York. I'm a New Yorker at heart, so. It's been a difficult transition for me, because of course, you know, I came from New York and I thought, you know, I'm gonna have the same approach and the same attitude here, and people were like, oh no, we're laid back, we chill here, you know, and I'm like, okay, I gotta slow down big time, but it's gone well. I mean, it's great. I've enjoyed it, I've acclimated, you know, we just renewed our lease for another 5 years, so I'm gonna be here for another little while. So it's great. And my advice to everybody is, get organic teaching. Learn organically. Make sure, you know, you learn the right way. Do it right from the beginning. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Don't just go to any Joe Schmo to learn, because they're going to teach you a few moves and tell you, oh, you can dance now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always good to do your research of who can offer you the best instruction. And remember, it's a never-ending growth process, and the sky's the limit. It's a beautiful journey. It's never-ending. You're always learning, and you're always going to get better as long as you work hard and you put your passion into it.
Well said. Thank you for this, man.
My pleasure, man. Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. Anytime, man. Thank you. My pleasure. God bless you too.